Welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast, a peek behind the curtain of what it's really like to drive other people's cars for a living. These are the stories behind the stories. Hello and welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast. We are a man down today, I'm afraid. Rowan Horncastle's not with us.
Double Ollie, Rowan.
Double Ollie, but we do have, you know, the best double act since, what, the two Ronnies? We got the two Ollies.
Glad to be here.
Marriage and Q. What's Rowan doing? I think he was last seen digging up monkey bikes in the Outer Hebrides.
On a Scottish beach somewhere, wasn't he? Yeah, on Jura, I think.
We are going to talk about that in a future podcast. Yeah. Don't worry, we're not going to leave you hanging on that one. But it's just the three of us today. So, what we want to talk about is, should electrifying classic cars be a crime?
Yes. Thanks very much for listening. And see you on the next
episode. Before we get into that, though, why don't we just go off at a tangent? What we've been up to? Who wants to go first?
I'll have a crack at this because it does have a slight bearing on this. I have been weighing cars. I borrowed, I borrowed a set of weighing scales. We did that Volvo EX30 test against all its rivals recently, and I borrowed
There's 10.
10 cars, yeah. And I borrowed a set of weighing scales because I was intrigued to see whether they all lie about their weights, you know, are they all about where they seem to be? And most of them are. And although in that class, those cars aren't actually that heavy. They're like 1,800 kilos is what the bloody S class used to weigh 15
years
ago.
We're being desensitized, aren't we? Yeah.
But I also had it over, I had these scales over the weekend. And I thought, I want to see what my cars weigh. So I had a Kia EV9 that weekend as well. So I stuck the Kia EV9 on the scales.
And they broke.
Weighed, yeah. Well, this is it. Each corner was only warranted up to 750 kilos. So if your car's weighs 3 tons, you can't actually weigh it. And we know cars are getting close to 3 tons.
Hummer owners, you're out.
Yeah, not on these. Anyway, the Kia weighed like 2,650. It was a big, heavy car.
What's claimed on it?
I think it is about that,
okay,
actually.
So
it's but par for the course by Land Rover standards. I think that's about mid-range by Land Rover. But a Kia was 2.6, which meant it weighed the same as my 306 Rally, which was 1150 kilos. Mm-hmm. The Lotus Elise, which was 735, still doesn't. Ooh. They don't put on weight over time. It's amazing. This
bit of dust, bit of mould, you know.
Don't get fat. So that's still 735. And then I put my dad's got a Morris Minor, and I stuck that on the scales, and that was 950 or 960. Mm. So altogether, those three cars weighed about the same as one Kia EV9.
Well, this is actually very topical. I was going to mock you for the way you spent your weekend, but actually, there's been quite a lot of anxiety in this, isn't in the media, about how Britain's crumbling car parks and pothole riddled roads actually up to the task of supporting the electric revolution.
I thought it was the other way around. The EVs that are already out there are to blame.
Yeah, well, this
it depends which newspaper you're reading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Either it's lorries or it's cyclists. Probably it's definitely the cyclists, isn't it? Let's be honest, Ollie. There's been a few people getting a bit hand-wringy and worried that if you park too many electric Range Rovers in, you know, your local multi-story,
a sinkhole's going to open up.
Or just a crumbly concrete's
hole in space-time's going to open up if you park too many in there. But I think they've all said, like, I mean, I know that the Highways Agency did issue like a very sort of pithy statement going, our bridges are all built to take sort of like military trucks. So they're built to withstand sort of like 50 tons per vehicle. So we think you'll be fine with your sort of, you know, electric Ford Puma.
Yeah. But apart from Hammersmith Bridge, which appears to be closed for like the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's the one place you can't go with anything heavy.
But I do think there will be a bit of a reckoning on this, because all those sort of gothic or those brutalist car parks built in the 1960s, they're all designed around, we usually talk about the size of parking spaces, don't we? But they were all designed around whatever it was, Hillmans and stuff back in the day, that all weighed a ton and measured about 4 metres long at the most. Mm. And now we've got these blimmin' great things that
The ramps that go up aren't big enough, are they?
No, you can't get down. We've got
curbing
wheels.
Nightmare they are.
Oof.
Although, it was a year back, but we had it was a Lamborghini. What was the Shan? And you could just drive straight under the barrier on one of those multi-story car parks, because it was a couple of inches lower.
Perfect.
So
that's
yeah,
the loophole for our
okay,
times.
It costs a few million quid to buy the car, but you're going to be saving 750 a day in multi-stories. So that's a top tip. All right, let's get this back on track. Should electrifying classics be a crime? So the reason we've decided to talk about this is, Ollie, you've been out driving a 240Z, I believe, that's had a heart transplant. I mean, we have driven plenty and plenty of electrified classics in the past, and I'm sure we'll talk about all of them as we go along. But that's kind of the kickoff. Is it a good one or a bad one?
Well, I tell you, it's interesting, isn't it? So I think this is where it comes down to. So in my head, if you electrify a classic, if that car had an engine that in the day was an important engine or was just an interesting engine, then electrifying it now just feels wrong.
Correct. I absolutely agree.
Yeah. Mm. But if you look back and thought, wow, imagine if they had electric in the 60s, would that car have been improved if it was run on electric in the 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever. So you look at cars like the Citroën DS, mm-hmm. and you think, oh yeah, actually that feels like that's probably quite suited to electric. Mm. The 240Z, it never meant that much to me growing up, the Datsun 240Z. It's not like a 911 in my back mm-hmm. catalogue brain. So it didn't offend me that it no longer had a straight six in it too much, because I wasn't that aware of it when I was little. But the reason that I quite enjoyed it is it's got way too much power for the chassis to cope with. So it's that thing of, like most electric cars, we're used to being quite sensible. They accelerate progressively and all this sort of mm-hmm. thing. This thing, if you gave it 50% throttle, you were dealing with all the wheel spin in the world. So you had this car that was, the throttle calibration was really, really good, but if you gave it too much, you were lighting them up.
What sort of weather are we talking about? I assume this is
dry and clear.
Oh, dry and clear.
Dry and clear.
And this isn't set up to be like a drift car.
It's been built as a one-off by this company called Silent Classics, and the owner, Jack Kerridge, has done it as his own car for himself. And it was sort of like a bit of an experiment, because he doesn't just take the underpinnings of a Tesla and just rebody it or whatever. He looks at the package, and then they build their own battery cells back up from
recycled
batteries. They take different motors. They have to do all their power inverters and things themselves, do all the control electronics themselves. So they're really quite clever about how they do it. So they've taken, I think it's an electric motor from a Lexus GS 450 hybrid. And they've upped the voltages on it and stuff. So this thing I think it's 350 horsepower. So it's double the power it used to have in period. Mm. So it's quick. It's properly quick, and because it's a bit loose and a little bit, it's a little bit scary when it goes. It's just,
you
have to be patient with it.
Is exactly how Ollie likes a car. When everyone goes, oh, it's a bit twitchy, this car. Oh, wants to spit me into a bush. Ollie comes in going, my perfect
That's
car.
Good, yeah.
That's the one I like.
I like that one.
Edgy.
I like the stuff where it's got more power than it has the ability to contain.
Requires some respect.
Yeah. It's so, a different type of power, though, because it's so instant. Is there sort of progression on the throttle? Or I think often, because I've driven a few of these kind of converted classics, and you realize that the it's that kind of final 10% that the OEMs really work on to get that electric motor, the throttle progression, the everything, the sort of regen braking to feel smooth and cohesive. And it can feel a bit like an on-off switch, the throttle, when you've just...
No, this is pretty well calibrated, actually. Mm. They've done a nice job with it. But it came across as a car that you'd be quite nice to go for a pootle on a Sunday afternoon with a picnic in the back and end up on top of a hill somewhere.
Yeah.
It's not like...
And weigh some cars.
Yeah. Perfect Sunday.
Oh, dreamy.
Just weighing his picnic. Yeah. could have brought more.
But this is interesting, because we're already getting into nitty-gritty here. You know how we've said about electric cars before, like, I'm not actually super after an electric Ferrari or an electric Lamborghini, but an electric Rolls Royce, absolutely, because it, you know, absolutely plays into what I want from my luxury car. Here we're splitting into more tricky territory, isn't it? Because you're thinking, like, a 240Z, that's a sports car, so strictly that should fall into our camp of shouldn't be electric. Mm-hmm. But like you're saying, the engine, not that notable in period, so... Yeah. Better as electric,
I sort of forgave it, but it does look good, but it doesn't quite have that same. It doesn't come across as like as precious as like an E-Type or a 911, where you think, oh my god, there's so much historical context in that you want to preserve it for the future. Mm-hmm. Mm. Doubtless there are Datsun owners out there right now going, what are you talking about? Because for me, that car is everything. But yeah, it's a personal thing, isn't it? So yeah. It made me think, okay, you then look at people who buy classic 911s and convert 911s and E-types and whatever else and go, well, no, for them, they're probably thinking that they didn't care about the petrol this engine. Is... It's us going, no, you must care about it.
Yeah. This was exactly it. I drove the company called Electrogenics, British-based company, do a few different conversions. I drove their electric E-type conversion the other day. It was not a demonstrator. It was about to be packaged off to the US to go to an owner, and I was honoured to drive it. But this was a car where the owner was basically getting on in years. And he said, I've sort of had my fun with E-types in the past, but I'm not getting any younger. I'm not going to be under the bonnet spannering around with them. I want to be able to go out in it and know it definitely won't expire in a cloud of steam, because the days of that being a fun will it won't it explode are sort of behind me.
Yeah,
so he's had it converted to electric, and it's been done in that way that they've absolutely matched the performance. So it does about the same, you know, it's a little bit quicker because you've got to shift gears, but fundamentally it's about as accelerative as it would be when it had the old straight six.
Yeah.
It's not breaking traction. It's not difficult to drive because you just leave it in gear and it sorts itself out. And this old chap's can't wait for it because he's like, I've driven lots of E-types. Yeah. I'm not taking an E-type out of the world. I'm keeping the engine in a sort of, you know, Indiana Jones crate in a warehouse somewhere. But I've got an E-type I can use more of the time. And as much as I've struggled with these things, I find it very difficult to argue with someone like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's a lot of people out there doing it, isn't there?
There are so many.
E-dubs do things, and Electrogenics, as you say, and
E-dubs is one, yeah. They're based up in North Yorkshire. That's a one that fits into your category there, because they do electric Volkswagen campervan conversions.
T2s and stuff.
Yeah, so if you've ever seen one of those...
I had a T2. It's the least reliable car I've ever owned.
Those air-cooled flat four in the back, wasn't it?
Terrible.
Yeah, so there you go.
And I would have an electric one of those.
Don't go up inclines. Don't go near Devon and Cornwall.
That's my tip for that.
I remember overheating a lot when it was on the telly show when the boys converted theirs into a sailing boat, remember? And that expired a lot. But the thing is about the E-dubs in particular is that is a double whammy. It's not just a better car to drive. It's also a better camper van. But because now it's got this electric power on board, you can run more camping equipment. So you can have a more reliable, more powerful electric stove, electric heater. You've got a more comfortable camper van. You've got, you know, you can charge equipment off it. So you can go adventuring, charge your electric mountain bikes off. That's bright up your street, Ollie.
Don't go adventuring too far, though, in case you run out of battery.
You've got to use the bike to cycle off and get help, of course. But yeah, so I like the idea of that, because you've got a car that's probably going to get you to the campsite, and then you'll have a less of a freezing your knackers off time once you're there.
So this is interesting. We're sort of getting to a point where there's benefits because it's just zero maintenance, basically. Mm-hmm. But you did quite like the sort of instant torque and the bit of wheel scrabble that you got in the 240Z. So it's like, are people doing this for dynamic reasons, or are they doing it for, you know, an easy life?
I think they're doing it for a quick buck mainly at the moment. I think they're doing, yeah. Ooh, I think they think there's, I think they think there's money in it for things, but I'm just not quite sure how long that is going to last. I don't know if that's
I wonder if it's already starting to teeter, because the other week I went and did a walk around of the new Aston Martin Vantage. You can find that on the Top Gear YouTube channel, incidentally, if you want to go and have a look at 650 horsepower baby Aston Martin. But we brought along, for a little bit of context, the Aston Martin Vantage V600 Le Mans from the 90s.
Oh, yes.
The twin supercharged monster.
Yeah, don't electrify that.
Subtle.
Yeah, well, for a start, yes. You imagine turning around and going, we're going to put a Tesla engine in that. I mean, there'd be riots. But the extremely lovely gentleman who popped down from Aston Martin Works, this is the kind of classic division within Aston Martin, who look after the King's, you know, wine-powered DB6 that you saw at the Royal Wedding, amongst other things. I said, a couple of years ago, since you're here, I drove the Aston Martin Works electric conversion. This was something they called a cassette, the electric cassette, because it was mounted, the electric motor and the whole gubbins, basically, was mounted to the same engine mounts, the same bolts, as the straight six that was in a DB4, a DB5, a DB6, or even a Lagonda. And they just designed this thing.
Reversible.
It would bolt in and out of any of their cars from the sort of the 60s and the 70s, fully reversible. No problem at all, sir. I think they were looking for about 200 grand for it. And I drove their DB6 prototype, which was a little bit shonky. We can come back to that. But I said, anyway, how many of those have you done? And they said, oh, we're not actually selling those anymore. And They just they had no interest in it. But a lot of the people who had, you know, worried about, am I going to be able to drive this into Mayfair in a few years' time? You know, yes, they've got those anxieties, but that's been overridden by the anxiety of, am I going to crucify the value of my car and my own reputation as a petrol head by converting it to battery power? So
you're
it's
going to be shunned at the country club.
Well, quite.
Yeah.
So it's caused these jitters.
Speaking of stuff in the news, there's also, there was some bad news for Lunaz as well. Lunaz, if you don't know, I drove an old Bentley that they converted to electric. So they their approach was definitely more the very high-end kind of luxury cars, converting them to electric. But they seem to have gone into administration. I think there's a couple of arms to the company.
Yeah, there is. There's this side that converts bin lorries.
So it's like the Lunaz Applied Technologies. Yeah. I think they've done one of those. It's one of those brilliantly worded, we've paused all business activities.
Yeah.
Which is, it's sort of like,
don't,
it's like,
think it's pretty,
that's like if you pause all eating activities because you've got diarrhea, you know, it doesn't sound great, does it?
Well, I just don't know how they got from silver shadows to bin lorries.
It's a good bit of business, isn't it? It's a good leap.
But apparently,
but you said they got 2 years worth of...
Yeah, the Lunaz design side of the business, which is exactly the Bentleys, so the Rolls Royces,
the David Beckham,
the David Beckham backed side of it. Apparently, they've got 2 years worth of orders for Range Rovers and for Rollers and what have you. And you'd imagine that that would be enough to sustain them. I hope so, because, like I say, if there's anything that does want to be electrified, I feel like it is more that side of things. And Jack, from what you said when you drove one, it seems like they're a nicely finished bit of kit.
Yeah, it wasn't quite finished, that car. That was sort of the root of me saying, you know, that final 10% of throttle calibration and brake regen and everything make it just feel totally seamless wasn't quite there. But to be fair to them, that was just me harassing them to get a drive in it as early as possible.
Got a magazine on a deadline.
It's not finished. How dare you? Well, I thought we'd play a little game. I mean, we're flirting around the subject, but there are sort of a grey area, isn't it? And there comes into it opinion and personal preference and what you believe to be a significant historic engine, and all of this comes into a sort of mix. And you said 240Z, it just wasn't your bag back in the day.
Yeah.
Whereas if the 240Z online community hear this, you need to go into witness protection now.
Exactly. So why don't we? I'll shout out some names of some classics.
What are we going to call this? Like swap or sacrilege?
No, or zap it or slap it.
That's it. Teary, mate.
Please comment underneath the podcast on better names for our electrified classics game. So, an original Mini, is that acceptable to electrify? I mean, David Brown's doing them and flogging them for 100k a piece.
Not at 100k, it's not acceptable. No.
No. There is, but what's the other company that's...
Electrogenics. Again, people who do the E-Type and they do Defenders as well. They're doing it like almost like a crate engine where you can, you know...
Get, do it yourself.
Order it, like Jeff will bring it, like an Amazon package.
Oh,
and
this
you
is
can
the
just
one.
Bring it, yeah, do to, it in your garage. Just bolt the engine out, in go the batteries and jobs are good. And I am agreeing with Ollie in this. I think an original Mini, the quintessential space-saving city car. Sure, why not have an electric one?
Yeah, I agree. I think it feels right, doesn't it?
It does.
Also, you built a Caterham in the office about 10 years ago.
Yeah, that wasn't
you?
Electric.
No, I think we should build an electric Mini in the office. Clean, no oil.
Clean, green.
No
we didn't
fluids.
Put any oil in the Caterham in the office. Nor brake fluid, importantly. That was the only thing that health and safety got quite excited about, was having brake fluid running around the office.
All right. Well, we'll float that one past BBC facilities team.
I mean, it'd probably
even
fit in the lift, wouldn't it? When we finished it, we could just drive it out.
You had to chop it up into bits just to get
it out
there.
We had to take the mudguards.
The Caterham.
No, the chassis went up in the service lift.
Yeah.
But after we built it, we had to take the mudguards and rear suspension back off to get it in the lift again.
There's pictures of all this on TopGear.com. If you don't actually believe that the Top Gear team did once build a whole Caterham sports car in the office, stick it into Google and... believe your eyes.
And of course, the time when Clarkson drove around in a
Peel P50.
There you go.
So TV centre. You know,
cars in the Top Gear office.
Which, ironically, you can now also get an electric version of, I believe.
Scariest car I've ever driven.
An acceptable conversion?
No. No, because that is the scariest car I have ever driven. It's
a Peel?
Absolutely lethal.
What? It's a tiny little toy thing.
No, 25.
How can you be scared of a Valkyrie? Yeah, but scared of a
GTR. Nah, mate. Yeah.
I tell you what, I drove one on the Isle of Man, and it's like being pushed downhill in a shopping trolley.
Was it during the motorbike race? Is that why you were scared? was John McGuinness coming towards you at 140 miles an hour?
It's like, I might have picked the wrong day to have
They've got no stability whatsoever. Absolutely none. It's like going downhill in a shopping trolley.
Since when has Top Gear ever come a cropper in a three-wheeled car anyway?
It'd be a good race, actually. Yeah. Shopping trolley versus Peel.
Yeah. Do a Jackass crossover.
All right, so I think we're in agreement.
Right, so we're
DS,
allowing them in.
You've already mentioned this one.
Yeah, I like that.
I like what Ollie's point earlier. The DS was super futuristic when it came out. Hydropneumatic suspension and later on the swivelling headlights and all these things. Yeah. If they could have made it electric in 1955, they probably would have.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Yeah, like that.
Porsche 911.
Get out.
No.
We've driven one. What's the Everati? Was it? Yeah,
I mean,
there are lots of people doing it.
I've never spun a car so much as the Everati. I could not make it go in the street. It was really wet at Dunsfold.
It was, yeah.
And hadn't they, correct me if I'm wrong, had they not tried to sort of simulate
the weight distribution
engines of it? Yeah. But the problem was is that because you had no sense of when the engine was sort of spooling up, you didn't get that kind of like flare of revs. It was just... And it had gone round again.
And
I was like one of those, you know when you see like a Formula One driver take the escape road in Monaco and then they have to like blip the throttle and do a 180 to go back out. I was just doing that, but like, oh, a little bit too much. Oh, a little bit too much. And I was just doing donuts in it. I was like, I'm just going to be here until the battery runs out. I didn't get on with it. But like you say, you know, an air-cooled flat six, mount at the rear, the most iconic engine configuration possibly of any car. Mm. Controversial statement, but maybe it's up there. To take that out is not for me.
No, me neither. I didn't get on with it for that exact reason.
Also, you know, Porsche will do you a Taycan and pretty soon an electrified Boxster and a Cayman and stuff.
Yeah,
I know they're not classics.
I'm not sure I want one of those either. No. That's the problem.
Exactly. Right, Range Rover. Let's bundle together Range Rover and Defender.
Oh, I'm going to go in first on this. Yes, for two reasons. One, because the Range Rover is a luxury car now, and electric, as we know, makes luxury cars better. But also, electric makes for better off-roaders.
Yeah, I quite like that.
A lot of engineers talk about, I don't agree with you, but we'll come on to that.
A lot of engineers, very precise throttle control.
Yeah.
When you've got, instead of mucking about with locking diffs and low range gearboxes, I was talking to someone from a German car company the other day who may or may not be working on an electric version of their very boxy off-roader, some sort of Wagen. And he was saying how it's so much better. It's such an easier starting point to make a car climb stuff than doing it with an engine, because you can just type into a laptop exactly how much torque you want to each wheel and off it goes. So I do think that is a worthwhile conversion.
Yeah. Mm.
Although, to be honest, if you're converting an original Range Rover, you're probably not going for that nth degree of off-road ability.
That's really killed my argument, hasn't it? Yeah. Thanks for that.
So my only comeback on that is that if that Range Rover had a V8 in it, there's something about that noise of that I would find it hard to. If it had a diesel in it, crack on.
Yeah. No, but then a diesel has got like 700 miles of range, probably, and an electric one.
Yeah,
doesn't.
You're not going to get that. But no one's going to be driving an old classic Range Rover that far, are they?
No.
They're just going to be rumbling around in
it. No one's driving
a
modern
one. Not rumbling,
that far.
They're going to be churning very quietly around in
Defender,
it.
Defender, then? I mean, by the way.
Are we talking the old Defender?
Yeah, old Defender. I'd say old Range Rover, old Defender. There's probably more electric conversions of those two cars out there without having the exact number. I don't know the number of companies that are doing that.
If I'm on the Outer Hebrides in the driving rain, no, I do want a diesel that I can sort of hit with a stick, like Basil Fawlty, and make it go. But if I am in Knightsbridge posing around, I want
wood.
An electric one. God, when you start getting into these, it's quite hard to come down either sort of yes or no. I'm going to err on yes. I'm going to say
a Defender.
Most of them had Transit engines in. I don't care about those engines.
I was going to say, if you'd stick to your original points, it was about special engines. It wasn't a special engine in that car. It's just... Its clatteriness was part of the character.
I think it feels so disconnected, doesn't it? Having a smooth, silent electric drivetrain
fast
under basically a bit of shed on wheels just feels a bit weird.
Yeah.
But I remember when, was it Paddy drove it on the TV show?
Yeah, Paddy drove it on the TV show.
And it was fast as you like.
So that basically
one
wheelie.
Yeah,
can I not have that? Yeah. Can I have it limited to like 100 horsepower? I don't need a Defender has to have a wheelie
bar. You missed my earlier point about it needing more power than it can cope with.
VW buses, yes.
100%.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Mm. Although my one reservation is, you know, with all these classics, because you were talking about Jack Kerridge and how he's repurposes battery cells and really thinks about what space he's got available in the chassis and then tries to maximize it whilst maintaining interior space, blah, blah, blah. Mm. The range you tend to end up with isn't particularly impressive. You're not getting any 300-mile range classics. They all tend to be about 150 because, you know, you'll see with modern cars, they're built to be EVs.
They're all big cars. They're all Datsun T240Z is a very small car.
Yeah, you're right.
And you haven't got a lot of room to do stuff.
Big car, long wheelbase, designed from scratch to be an EV, and then you can cram in enough for 300 miles.
Yeah.
But these also... So if I sort of look at the... a kind of EV, like a Type 2 camper conversion, my worry is it's 150-mile range, and then you load it up with kids and stuff, and you've probably got 100 miles, and then you're looking at like, okay, we can go to the local park, and that's about it. Yeah. Maybe battery tech needs to improve before they can be proper adventure buses. Mm.
Mm. But then again, the ID Buzz that I bought, in wintertime, I could just about get to the coast and back. I could do about 160 miles, 150 miles with a family on board.
Yeah.
It's not really.
Was that full
impressive.
Of bikes and people?
No, didn't have anything on the outside. Just had five of us in it.
Yeah. Well, the Buzz California is coming. It'll be the long wheelbase one, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So it does get a bigger
bit
battery.
More battery. Yeah.
Yeah. Bit more weight. That's what he needed. Bit more weight.
Yeah, bit more range.
It's not going to do well on the marriage scales, is it?
It's not. I'm offsetting.
Ferraris. Now, I'm sure we've probably driven an electric converted Ferrari, maybe a 308.
You've driven the little car company. That's
that's not conversion, though. That's
bespoke. That's a little darling. And that is, if you want to see the official electric lap record of Fiorano, just type it into YouTube. Because
set
it's me
by
a
certain Mr. Q.
In a 75% scale Testa Rossa. But
that is the only permissible electric Ferrari.
Because for all Ferrari engines iconic? This is the thing. You know, the V8s, the V12s, you know, normally aspirated, even the turbo stuff lately.
Yeah.
V6.
I think if you spoke to someone who was sort of a lifer at Ferrari, they would say the engine, it all sort of begins with the end. Well, it has to be.
This is the Enzo Ferrari quote, isn't it? I sell you an engine, I give you the rest of the car for free. Badass quote from a company.
There we go. And for that reason, you sort of it doesn't feel right. Unless I suppose if the engine are completely, you know.
No, I'd rather expire in a cloud of dust and smoke than I would drive an electric Ferrari.
The Ferrari that's often maligned as one of the worst ever, the 400 or
412.
412. I've never driven one, but I think the automatic came with like a 3-speed Chrysler Auto slush box, didn't it? That might be approaching the point where it's like, it's already quite a big, luxy Ferrari.
Yeah.
And the gearbox is obviously going to have come off a tractor, so maybe, but I can't bring myself to say it.
What have you used, say, like the motor from a LaFerrari or something? So you used like genuine Ferrari electric or an SF90 or something, and the battery pack, or like a few of them sort of next to each other. Now you're getting into, it's an electric Ferrari.
By
the point you've finished doing that, it's going to be about £2 million, because you've had to strip down a LaFerrari for parts.
Something about a Ferrari, isn't it? Just feels like sacrilege, even if it is something like a Mondial where it's sort of...
Is there an Italian supercar is there a Maserati?
Some of the, not a supercar one, like a Levante, I wouldn't be bothered by.
I'm not bothered by the Levante
anyway. Yeah, I don't want to drive one. But look at the MC20. They're already offering you that choice now. I know we've kind of moved from classics to modern cars here, but you can buy an MC20 in electric or petrol. That new Alfa Romeo 33 Stradale, you can buy an electric or petrol, but they're not disclosing how many of the 33 that they're making.
That might be one of the ones where we quietly go,
either way,
can we have a go in the the electric version, they like, ah, yeah, we very didn't sell any of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the same. Mercedes tried this a few years ago. Do you remember they did the SLS e-cell?
Oh, yeah, they yellow made.
Oh, I
yeah.
saw one of those eight. The other day.
I think they made eight. I once pinned down someone at the Mercedes-Benz Museum that said they knew of eight, like worldwide. Right.
It was about $450,000.
Yeah, but I think like four of those were owned by Mercedes-Benz and used for various demos.
So that's owned by dealers.
Yeah, and look at Audi as well, going, here's the V10 R8. I'm not going to do an electric one. Everyone goes, great, and gets on with the V10. Yeah. So it's a hard sell in the modern cars. You know, no wonder it's so contentious with the classics.
Yeah.
All right. So Ferrari, we're going to leave well alone. What about something different? What about like a? I know the answer to this one. An Impreza.
Ah, see, that's an iconic engine.
That's an iconic engine.
No. Flat four.
Not having any of that.
Yeah.
A boxer.
Anything else that is acceptable?
Small urban stuff, Fiat 500s.
Oh, yeah, there we go. So
that's going back to like the mini stuff.
It goes back to the mini stuff again. Mm. That's what Silent Classics' main business is converting for Fiat 500s. And that's perfectly acceptable to me. I think that's quite a nice little way of bobbling around.
Yeah, and that's like when they brought
villa
back
in the south of France or down to Italian coast or whatever it is.
That sounds nice. And when they brought back the BMW Isetta as the Microlino, they didn't think, oh, let's put a scooter engine in it. They just went straight for electric.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just name a car that's got a rubbish engine, either unreliable or something like a Triumph Stag. Sorry, all the beardy men in garages listening to this, working on the old girl as we speak. But the Stag engine's always held up as one of the worst engines ever made and, you know, constant
overheating
problems.
The thing is, I wouldn't want a Stag or an MGB or anything like that anyway. So I don't particularly want
I can see you in a flat cap, Ollie. Why not?
Steady on, Q.
How about we flip it round?
What, just put them on the roof? Yeah,
no, okay. No. What about putting a combustion engine in a Tesla?
Been done, hasn't it?
Someone's, has it?
Yeah, some jokesters put V8s in a Model S because of this. If you've heard the interview I did with Peter Rollinson, the boss of Lucid, he was saying that the reason that the Model S frustrated him when he joined Tesla and became the chief engineer was because it was styled to look like it could have a V8 in the front, even though it was
and
never...
And then behold, it can.
Yeah, but exactly. It turns out you can package a Corvette engine in the front of one if you really try hard enough. And I have seen people do it with Priuses as well, haven't they? There's a few troll-worthy Toyota Priuses knocking around with fuel-snarling, spitting like engines
in them. But the thing is, most electric cars are not exciting enough to sort of warrant having an exciting engine in them.
Mm.
They're all, at the moment, they're all pretty steady going. They're just... Saloons, SUVs, crossovers. There hasn't been enough.
You don't think one day in 100 years someone will take a Rimac and drop a Ferrari Enzo V12 in the back and just go, this is what it should have been all along.
Yeah, but then again, that's so exotic in terms of EV engineering that I would fight that the corner for that car and say, leave it alone. This is... You know,
they only made seven of them or whatever it is. Leave the little thing alone.
Or what about your...
Although I have to say, the Lotus Evija, you know, they're taking a bit of a different approach to Rimac and the way that they're stacking the batteries. The Rimac has a kind of T-shaped batch down the sort of spine and then behind the seats, whereas the Lotus is sort of piles up the batteries like a pyramid behind you.
Like an untidy teenager's laundry.
Just lob them in, strap them
floor
down.
Floor drobe of batteries.
to give it the sort of mid-engined weight distribution, so this sort of rotation point behind the driver. So, I mean, you can just whip that out and stick something. It's going to be an engine-shaped space behind you in the Lotus Evija.
Sure, it's that easy.
But yeah, look, we could go on for days on this one. Head to topgear.com, have a look at... We've driven most of them, let's be honest, with sort of mixed opinions and results and these electrified classics. But I think it's a debate that will rage on and on. Why don't you let us know, if you're listening on Spotify, you can leave a comment underneath the podcast. Let us know which classic would you electrify and which one would you absolutely not electrify? What would be sacrilege to touch with
I'm imagining we're going to see a lot of Ferraris in that list.
Yeah. Well, we've already dealt with that. So there we go. A nice, healthy debate on the Top Gear Magazine podcast. Hope that was fun. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.